is we are going to spend some time getting into the Word of God, which is very exciting. But if I haven't met you before, my name's Em. I'm part of the team here at the PM. I'm married to Arlo, who's hiding somewhere in that section. I'm not wearing my glasses, so I think he's in the fourth row, but I can't point him out as easily as usual. Fifth row? No, fourth. There he is. Yep, great. But I'm really excited about tonight. We are kicking off a new series called Well Done, Ending the Year with Purpose. And this is a really, I think, a really fruitful time to have this conversation as we kind of hit the point in the year where the weather is warming up, as Ben said, hopefully, permanently. People are starting to experience the full force of the UV that is in Canberra. Katie's shaking her head and saying no. But we're kind of on that road to Christmas, but not quite there yet. So it's not quite time to down tools, kick back with a Zupa Dupa and watch Elf. But we're getting close. So what a good time to talk about ending the year with purpose, ending the year well. And before I kind of unpack what that looks like, look at the verse of the series and talk about what we're specifically going to cover tonight, why don't we just pray? Why don't you just hold your hands out with me and we'll pray together. Our Heavenly Father, we just thank you for this opportunity to gather here tonight, to get around your word, to hear what you have to speak to each of us, God. And we just pray tonight that your peace will just be in this room, God, and that you will just be speaking to each of our hearts, God, that you will just equip me with the words that you have for me to speak, and that we will all leave this place changed tonight. In your mighty name we pray, amen. Amen. Okay, so tonight we are going to unpack a topic called Well Done with God, Finishing in Faith. Now, the key verse for this series, and also one that I'll keep looping back to as part of tonight's message, comes from Matthew 25, 23, and it says this: His master replied, "Well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Come and share your master's happiness." Now, super quick contextualization of that, because it's kind of a random statement to make to someone without anything to understand what happened before. But basically, this verse comes from a story that Jesus tells in the Gospel of Matthew called the Parable of the Talents. And basically, the Parable of the Talents talks about an employer who had three employees or servants, gave them each some money, some talents. That's a unit of currency in the time that this was written. He gives one of his staff members five talents, one of his staff members three talents, and one of his staff members one talent. Now, the first two guys took the money, went out and invested it. So they made five talents turn into 10 and three talents turn into 6. The third guy took his one talent and buried it because he went, "Ooh, my master's kind of exacting and I don't want to get in trouble. So I'm going to put this in the ground so that nothing can happen to it." Now, where we come in with this verse verse 23 is at the end where the master has said to the servant who buried the talent, like, "Bro, you could have put it in the bank and then it would have earned some interest at least." But he praises the two servants that took the talents that he had given them and went out and did something with them. And he says what he says in verse 23, "Well done, good and faithful servant." And I think this highlights a really important truth and one that we kind of need to keep in the back of our minds as we go through the rest of the stuff I'm going to share tonight, which is that God has placed each of us, every person in this room, here with something in your hands. We all have different talents, different skills, different interests, different capabilities, different strengths, all different, all uniquely positioned to do something for God's kingdom. We're not placed here to bury what he's given us. So we actually need to come together and operate in tandem. And he says this in chapter 2, verses 20 and onwards. "But do you want to know, O foolish man, that faith without works is dead? Was not Abraham our father justified by works when he offered Isaac his son on the altar? Do you see that faith was working together with his works, and by his works faith was made perfect? You see then that a man is justified by works and not by faith only." Now, James isn't saying, there's two things he's not saying. The first one is not that we have to work to earn our salvation. It's not salvation by works, it's salvation by grace. So let's put that out of our heads. The second thing is he's not saying sacrifice Isaac or anyone else. Good, got that? Excellent. But what he is doing is taking an example from Genesis 22, where Abraham had been given this amazing gift of a son. He'd been praying for this son. And then God said, take your son and sacrifice him on the mountain. And it wasn't, if you've read the story, you'll know that this doesn't happen. God intervenes. Isaac's all G. But Abraham didn't just passively believe in God. He took his faith and put that into action. And he was prepared to act in response to his faith and the call of God. So what James is reminding us is that if we profess to believe in Jesus, but nothing changes about our lives, then our faith isn't living. And it is impossible to finish in faith if our faith isn't alive. Do you follow what I'm saying? Yeah, so James says this again in chapter 2, verse 26. For as the body without the spirit is dead, so faith without works is dead also. Faithfulness looks like faith demonstrated, faith that changes our lives, our outlook, our decisions, our behaviours. It actually makes a difference in what we do, not just believing in God and kind of burying it and putting it to the side and never touching it again. So tonight, when we're talking about faith in the context of this series and this message, we need to think about it from the perspective of, God, you've placed me here. I want to learn and study your word about how to finish well in faith, but that requires me to do something with what you've given me. Okay, does that all make sense? Thank you for listening to my long preamble. Okay, what we are now going to dive into is what it means to finish in faith, which is the topic of tonight's message. And I want to look at this from two different views, because when I started to think about it, it made sense to kind of divide it up. And the first view is the idea of finishing a season in faith. Finishing a season in faith. And the second one is the idea of finishing a lifetime in faith. I have some examples and kind of things I want to unpack for each of those different viewpoints. And then some practicals that go with each, but also what kind of ties both of them together. So we're going to crack on with finishing a season in faith. And I think this one's often easier to grapple with because it feels more concrete. It feels more in the here and now. And what I'd like to do is go to one of my favourite stories in the Bible. And I think 30% of the time that I get up and share, I reference this. But it's the book of Daniel and the story of Daniel in the lion's den. I'm going to give you the Sparks Notes version of this. So please, no direct quotes from the word of the Lord here, but it is the gist. But basically, Daniel was a young Jewish man who was taken from Jerusalem into Babylon when the Babylonians conquered them. And like a lot of the young men, he was brought in and kind of trained up in the way of Babylon's administration. And he built up so much credibility with the Babylonian authorities over the time that he worked there, including the king, that at the point that we're going to start looking at this, Daniel has been appointed one of the top three administrators in the kingdom. He's built up a lot of favour and he's been promoted. Now, the other administrators are pretty jealous of Daniel. They are not a big fan, but they realise they're never going to catch him out on anything unless they get him set a trap around Daniel being faithful to God. The only way they can catch him out is through that. And so what the other administrators and satraps convince King Darius to do is to issue a law that anyone who prays to any other person or God that isn't Darius should be thrown into the den of lions. And Darius, even though he likes Daniel, is perhaps not the smartest and puts that in writing, which means is that they're able to arrest him and they make Darius enforce the law that he has written. This means Daniel's thrown into the den of lions and having him executed, or so he thought. And so we get to this section in chapter 6, verse 21, where Darius has raced down to find Daniel, and it says, Daniel answered, "May the king live forever. My God sent his angel, and he shut the mouths of the lions. They have not hurt me because I was found innocent in his sight, nor have I ever done any wrong before you, your majesty." The king was overjoyed and gave orders to lift Daniel out of the den. And when Daniel was lifted from the den, no wound was found on him because he had trusted in his God. Daniel's response to this situation, to finding out that this king that he had supposedly built up this favour with had issued a decree that meant that if he kept praying to God whom he loved and served, he would be thrown into the den of lions. His response to that is to turn back to God, to continue exercising his faith through prayerful action. And we know from reading elsewhere in Daniel chapter 6, read the whole chapter, it's worthwhile, that when Darius actually heard about when Daniel heard about Darius's decree, the first thing he goes and does is pray, but it says just as he had always done. Just as he had always done. His time with God was regular. It was part of his routine actions. It wasn't just a crisis response. This was something that was part of Daniel's day-to-day. And so the first practical takeaway that I'd love to leave you guys with tonight, when it comes to finishing a season well in faith, like Daniel does in this one, is that we need to keep being faithful in the little. We need to keep being faithful in the little. Daniel reverted to his routine, the small things, which was returning to the presence of God and praying. He didn't go out campaigning. He didn't cause a fuss. He didn't do what I probably would have done, which is call Darius and go, God, seriously, why would, like, what have you done? You've stitched this up quite significantly. What he did is go back to his room and pray and bring that concern and that petition to the Lord. And when we actually loop back to the verse, Matthew 25:23, it says, you have been faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. And Daniel's whole story, beyond just the den of lions component, is such an amazing example of being faithful in little and then being entrusted with more. When you go back to the beginning of Daniel, he basically starts out as an intern and works his way up to being in charge of the whole kingdom. Because moment after moment, Daniel continues to prove himself faithful with the thing that has been placed in his hands at the time that it was placed there. And that capacity was enlarged over time, but he was continuing to be faithful. He didn't use his kind of track record of faithfulness as an excuse to become bitter or angry or go on a tirade about this particular scenario where his life was under threat. He was continuing to be faithful in the small things. Whether that's in our own lives, continuing to have that quiet time with God, continuing to give and be generous even when we're struggling or feeling like things are really tight financially, whether it's continuing to show love and demonstrate love to someone in front of us, even when we feel really stretched capacity-wise. There are so many opportunities for us to grab hold of the little thing in front of us that God's put in our hands. And just as Daniel did, continue to finish the season that we're in well by focusing on those small things and doing them. So in the same way, when we're navigating a really hard season, we need to persevere in those little things. Now, the second thing that I found really interesting reading this section of Daniel again was what Daniel says the moment Darius yells to him when he's in the lion's den. The first thing he does is he honors Darius, and the second thing he does is he praises God. He does not slag the guys who put him there. He does not berate Darius for signing the law that put him there. And, you know, even though this is an incredibly stressful situation, I certainly haven't been under threat for my life in the way that Daniel was. But the thing I want to highlight here, and the second thing I want you to take away, is that we need to keep honoring God with our words. To finish the season well in faith, we need to keep honoring God with our words. It is so easy to get caught in a justice crusade or think that because our circumstance is genuinely frustrating, that we have a right to pour forth any words that we feel like and any amount of criticism we feel like. And I am speaking this to myself. Alu can attest to this from personal experience. But I just think, how much of a difference would it make in showing a life that has actually been changed by faith? If amidst all of the struggle, all of the hard seasons, the things that come out in our words and the things that come out of our mouth is praise to God and honour to others. And I think this is an incredibly powerful way to respond when dealing with a tough situation and pressing through to finish it in faith, is that we can continue to pour out praise to God. Why does that matter? Because what comes out of our mouth reflects our heart, and an evil man brings evil things out of the evil stored up in his heart. But if we're able to, you know, and this is not saying don't seek counsel with someone trusted and express, you know, oh, I'm frustrated by this situation, it's really difficult, I'm having a really, really hard time. That's totally normal and okay, and we should be able to express that. But there's also that component and that action required to turn back to God and to lean on him in those moments, trusting in his grace to keep our hearts soft so that what comes out in our words when we're going through the thick of that is actually glorifying him. To finish well in faith, we need to be mindful about what's going on in our hearts as well as what's going on in our words and our actions. As his time with God, He finished well with God in faith, putting that relationship at the forefront of what he was doing. And so I think what we need to be pondering when we're in the middle of a really challenging season, where it feels like everything's against us, or, you know, it just feels like it's never ending because we're in the middle of it, we can keep being faithful in the little, even the things that feel insignificant or small or pointless, because, you know, what's the point in doing this kind thing for someone when someone has been so unkind to me? Continuing to be faithful in the little, and we can continue to honour God with our words, despite what we're going through, letting our praise pour out of our mouths and honouring words go towards others. Are you still awake and alive? Excellent. This then leads us to thinking about faithfulness across a lifetime. And this one feels a little bit more nebulous and a bit trickier to deal with. I don't know about you, but I don't often think about what my life will look like in 65 years. I am still in my 20s, and in many ways I feel wildly underqualified to talk about finishing a lifetime in faith. But if you're also, you know, a teenager or in your 20s or 30s or wherever you're at, I think sometimes we do ourselves a disservice by not looking up and looking forward. I grew up in a bit of a strange household. I am the youngest of seven, but all of my siblings had moved out by I was in primary school and early high school. And so my household comprised me and my parents. My parents had me when my mum was in her 40s and my dad was 50. And my grandparents, who were in their 80s and 90s, and my great aunt, who was nearing 100. So the average age of my household when I was about 13 was 65. And I was dragging that average down by a lot. When they took me away, I think it was about 78. So doing heavy lifting for the average age there. But I spent a lot of time hanging out with my grandmother, my granddad, and my great aunt. And I think the perspective that they had was just so profound. I know, you know, a 6-month period of struggle or even a really difficult year when you're 25 is a lot smaller proportion of your life when you're 85, right? And so I spend so much time thinking about my grandparents and all of the stuff that they did across their lives when thinking about finishing a lifetime well in faith. My grandma and my granddad was an Anglican priest. They lived in country New South Wales, and he earned himself the nickname the Versatile Vicar because he was the Anglican minister, the milk tanker driver, and the bus driver for the town. And grandma worked alongside him, and they were married for over 60 years. And grandma only passed away a couple of years ago, actually, at the age of 103. So when I think of a lifetime of faith well lived, I think of her, because not only was she, like, that's a hell of an innings, but she was faithful right through to the end, right? She was such a woman of prayer. She was so prayerful and faithful through her entire life. Even when she was in aged care, she was witnessing to the other elderly people. And bringing them to faith. I also spoke to my mum about this recently and found out that Grammy started praying for our future spouses before I was born. So when my mum was pregnant with me, she was praying for my future husband. Now, if you know Arlo and I, you'll know that he's 8 months younger than me. So he was being prayed for before he was alive. So if you ever interact with him and think, wow, what a fabulous, fabulous bloke, which he is, think of Grammy. Because many good prayers went into that, including I found out that she prayed from when I was a child for a man that could cook. Somehow, even in my infancy, grandma knew that I would need that. So she did very well. And one of the verses actually that we read out at her memorial service was from Paul's words in 2 Timothy. Now, this is in the last letter that Paul wrote before he was executed in Rome for his faith. And in chapter 4, he says this, knowing that he's actually coming to the end of his life. And he said, I have fought the good fight. I have finished the race. I have kept the faith. Now there is in store for me the crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, will award to me on that day. And not only to me, but also to all who have longed for his appearing. And we see so much about Paul's life across the New Testament. He wrote 14 of the 27 books, and we see about his conversion in the book of Acts, where he went from being someone who persecuted Christians to someone who was planting churches and encouraging and equipping the early church to continue Christ's ministry. And we also read a bit about what he went through as part of his Christian walk. He was shipwrecked multiple times because once isn't enough. He was imprisoned, he was beaten, he was whipped, he was left hungry, he had no possessions left. And on top of all of that, he was trying to wrangle a bunch of different churches who had some quirky ideas and were arguing with each other, which sounds like a very fun time. And coming to the end of his life, what does he say in 2 Timothy? I have fought the good fight, I have finished the race, I have kept the faith. I have kept the faith. Through all of the different seasons, all of the different hard things, Paul exemplifies what it is to run a race that is finished and finished well across a lifetime. And I think it's often really tricky if we're in the middle of a really hard season, and I think that's been something that I've been grappling with a lot over the past couple of years. There's been some really big challenges that have felt like they've just dragged out a little bit. And sometimes it can feel like putting one foot in front of the other with no capacity to look up and think about, Lord, how do I finish the end of my life well, let alone how do I get through this week? But I think if we continue to apply those practicals around getting through a season, finishing that well, turning to God and being faithful in the little, honouring him with what comes out of our mouths, we also need to think about changing our perspective and looking up sometimes. Even if you're a teenager, even if you're in your 20s, the idea of hope for something beyond our lives, an eternity spent with God as he's promised us in his word, is something that also ties back again to Matthew 25. And it says at the end of that verse 23, come and share your master's happiness. And in that parable, this is a reference to an invitation by the master who represents God in the parable to enter into eternity for those that love God and choose to follow him and accept what Jesus did for them on the cross. And that's what finishing a lifetime in faith well looks like. Now, that said, it's still not particularly easy. And it's hard, I think, sometimes, as I said, to go back to that perspective of, you know what, there's something more than this struggle I'm in right now. There's something beyond the struggle I'm in right now. There's a bigger purpose. But I think there are a couple of practical things that we can try applying. And again, I'm saying this to myself because when it's been a bad week, I sometimes will spiral into a this will be forever and I will never be done with this. But it's not true. And I do these things for myself regularly. And the first takeaway for finishing a lifetime well in faith is that we need to consciously and continuously surrender our life story to God's plan. Consciously surrender our life story to God's plan. Why? Why would we do that? First of all, it reminds us that God is in control and not us. I don't know about you, but that actually takes pressure off for me. If I know that God is the author of my story from beginning to end, I know that I might make a mistake here. I might not get this right, but Lord, I trust that you are taking me on a journey from the beginning of my life to the end and that you order my steps all the way through. The second reason that we surrender our life story to God's plan is that it is a practical action of surrender. It is a practical action of surrender where we go, Lord, you are the author of this. I choose to give you the story of my life. I choose to surrender my path to you. The other reason is that it gives us hope for a future. It gives us hope. I think this is something that over the past kind of 6 to 12 months, there have been moments through different struggles and different challenges where I literally sat down before God and just said, like, I literally cannot see hope beyond this. I cannot see a practical way forward with this particular challenge. I don't know how we're going to get through it. I don't see the outcome. I don't understand how you could possibly resolve this. But Lord, I know that you give me hope and I know that you see an outcome for this and I know that you have a supernatural way through from A to B that is not any of the ways that I can possibly imagine in my head. And so Lord, even though I have no hope right now, I know that you can sustain me through this. I know that you can get me from A to B in your goodwill, in your grace and in your power, Lord. And so I think that if we consciously surrender that life story to God's plan, consciously hand it over to him through prayer, Lord, I don't see what's ahead. I don't see how to hope, but Lord, I know that you have hope for me. God, I choose to trust you with my future decisions. I choose to trust you with my future seasons. Help me to continue make choices that guide me towards that place that you have for me. We need to consciously surrender our life story to God's plan. The second takeaway that I think helps us in looking ahead and being able to finish a lifetime well in faith. And as I go through this, I might also just invite the CA team to come up behind me because we're going to wrap up fairly soon. The second practical takeaway is that we need to look back and find your testimony. Look back and find your testimony. Looking back helps remind us where we've been, and it is easier the longer your journey has gone. But when we look back, we often can see those past seasons that were incredibly tough and at the time felt incredibly overwhelming, but that have now concluded. I in particular this year have thought back a lot to when I was a graduate. I did my first, had a good first rotation in my new role. And my second one was incredibly difficult. It was 6 months and I just was shattered. Like, I felt incredibly anxious about going to work. I was really struggling and it just felt like getting through every day was just impossible. And that was a 6 month period. Now, at the time, incredibly overwhelmed, incredibly defeated. Looking back, I can see the hand of God on every step. I can see God's goodwill, his presence through all of those. And I can also see how he has enlarged my capacity, because what's been going on this year has been infinitely more difficult than went on in that 6 months. And at the time then I felt just as overwhelmed, but being able to look back and go, Lord, you brought me through that. And that felt incredibly difficult. I know you can bring me through this. I know that even though there's that same sense of hopelessness and helplessness and aloneness, that you walked with me through that and you will walk with me through this. And it becomes a testimony of how God carries us through. I often will find myself, even in seasons now, I have to remind myself to go back and do this, because I'll start to feel trapped or panicky about how uncomfortable something is and how long it's dragging on. Not the most patient person, as you can probably imagine. But I am so encouraged when I reflect on my past struggles and see the way that God came through. So we need to look back and find your testimony. I really love how the psalmist puts this in Psalm 71, and I think it captures how we can look back on all of the things that we've walked through, whether you've been here for a decade or 7 decades, and use these to glorify God. And it says this in Psalm 71 from verse 15, "My mouth will tell of all your righteous deeds, of your saving acts all day long, though I know not how to relate them all. I will come and proclaim your mighty acts, sovereign Lord. I will proclaim your righteous deeds, yours alone. Since my youth, God, you have taught me, and to this day I declare your marvelous deeds. Even when I am old and grey, do not forsake me, my God, till I declare your power to the next generation, your mighty acts to all who are to come." Even when I am old and grey, do not forsake me, my God, till I declare your power to the next generation. That's such a cool image of finishing a lifetime well in faith. And so to keep moving along that journey, to kind of step through particular seasons, maybe those hard patches, those valleys, and continue fixing our eyes on the end goal, which is eternity with God, we need to keep actively surrendering our life story to God's plan and look back and find our testimony to lean on as we move forward. Now, I said earlier that I would kind of bring this back to something that's common to both of these viewpoints as we think about finishing well in faith, finishing a season, or continuing to finish our lives and walk with Jesus. And the thing that pulls all of that together is that to continue to live a faithful life, to persevere, it requires us to have relationship with God as our primary goal. Not just the destination, but the day-to-day walking. Why would we be faithful in the little or honour God with our words if we don't want to be close to God, if we don't have a relationship with God? You know, what does it mean to surrender our life plan to him, or to, you know, look back and find the testimonies of what he's done in our life so far, if we aren't thinking about an eternity with God and wanting to pursue that relationship with him, because he first pursued us by sending his son Jesus to die on a cross for us so that we could come into relationship with him, know his love, know his grace, know his presence, have closeness to him here on earth because of what Jesus did, getting to have that intimacy with him, but also know that we're going to have perfect intimacy with him come eternity if we profess with our mouths and believe in our hearts that Jesus is Lord and that God raised him from the dead, and that we can spend eternity with him because we believe in him. So it all comes back to relationship. It all comes back to Jesus. And he is the only one that can sustain us through any of those practical steps. We bring what we have, but ultimately He is the one who puts those things in our hands and carries us through, whether it's through a season or whether through a life lived well in faith. It's only made possible through His perfect faithfulness, because we're never going to be perfect. We're never going to finish every season well in faith. We're never going to get everything right all the way along the journey. But thankfully, God is perfectly faithful. God is perfect and loving. And it says in Deuteronomy 7 verse 9, "Know therefore that the Lord your God is God, the faithful God who keeps His covenant of loving devotion for 1,000 generations with those who love Him and keep His commandments." And you know, that those words were written back in the Old Testament, and we know that God continued to be faithful and show that same character of faithfulness all the way through the Old Testament, right through to the New Testament, to the Gospels, where we read about how He sent His Son Jesus to die for each of us, to bring us into a loving relationship with Him. And we know that faithfulness continues on today. He is the only one who can be perfectly faithful, and it's only through Him that we can finish well in faith if we bring what we have and go, "Lord, I need You to fill the gap. I need You to come and fill what I cannot, because I am small and I am imperfect, and it's only through Your saving grace that I can walk through the journey of this particular scenario, this season, but also life."